Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
I'm great, Scott. Are you ready for this? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Bearcats football is back! It is back! We are back! Are we back, Scott? I think we're back.
Yeah, we're back. 2-0. Shocking the world. National television. Then winning the longest running non-conference rivalry. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, these games that we saw on the schedule going forward, I mean, we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, both of us were sitting before the season, before UCLA started, looking at like a 6-6 football team. And we thought UCLA was going to be a struggle. I think we both thought they would lose by at least a touchdown or two. And in that game in particular, really shined the light on how far this defense came or has come. And we talked about it. We knew the strength was going to be probably the front seven defensively. I mean, that they were going to go as far as that unit went. And they were dominant against UCLA. Outside of the touchdown run, I think they held them to something like 2.5 yards per carry, something like that. They were completely keeping Chip Kelly's offense on their heels. Cortez Broughton had 3.5 damn sacks out of the defensive tackle position, which I don't even know. I didn't know it was even possible. Brian Wright is clearly made to be a stud at middle linebacker. He's flying all over the field. He's got the size to penetrate the defensive line. Marcus Freeman is drawing up blitzes left and right. I mean, we thought that the defensive front was going to be the strength of the team this year. It definitely was last year, but they are far and away better than I thought they could ever be. And we could be staring down one of the most elite defenses that UC's had in the last decade, even. And I'm even talking about the one in what was it, 2011, 2012, when it was John Hughes and Derek Wolfe as the defensive tackle pairing. I mean, we're looking at something similar here with Cortez Broughton and Marquise Copeland. Not to mention everybody else on that front seven.
Yeah, Broughton especially, like already 5.5 tackles for loss, like his career high. He set in two games. Just like a just amazing like effort like so far from him. And like, we did talk about that a lot, like how like the front would be what drives the defense, and the front has been like insane. Like, I really don't know what more you can say about how like they really shut down UCLA, and like Miami didn't really have a chance. And then on top of that, they delivered like highlight reel hits like 4 times in the Miami game to make it even more satisfying when that game was kind of boring.
Oh, it's not even, yeah, it's not even just the fact that they're piling up numbers. Like, to your point, they've got an attitude about them. It's something, you know, they will blitz you whenever they feel like it, and when they blitz you, they're going to hit you in the teeth. And Brian Wright's going to run over from the other side of the field and talk trash in front of your face constantly, you know? It's the kind of defensive attitude that has quite frankly been missing from that side of the ball for a long time. And you know, that might rub people the wrong way, but at the end of the day, I mean, they're an aggressive, angry unit that really wants to hurt you. And I can back that every single day of the week.
Yeah, because that confidence and like that swagger is like something we really haven't seen from the defense in a long time. I think you could even go back to like that 2011-12 team, like where all the guys that end up in the pros. Like, we haven't really seen the UC defense that confident. It seemed like they would bend and then break the last few years.
Yep.
Like, this year they've really stepped up. And like, really outside of the long run against UCLA, like, they didn't really give up anything in the second half of that game. And, like, they like were a big reason that the Bearcats were able to pull that one out. And I think you could say, like, they went a long way to winning the game on Saturday against Miami. It's like Miami's offense looked really bad.
Yeah, and how long has it been since we've actually seen or we would have been able to actually like pinpoint a unit and say, hey, that's going to be the star of this team. You know, we could have mediocrity all over the place, and we could still point at that unit and say, hey, UC is going to be really good at that this year. Up until about like 2014, it was like the passing game. When, you know, Gunnar Kiel came onto the field against Toledo and threw 6 touchdowns with one of the best wide receiving corps UC's ever had. 15, 16, 17, the end of the Tuberville era and the start of the Fickell era, we really didn't have any single unit that we could, like, say, yeah, like, other areas could struggle, but this unit will pick up the slack. The quarterback play has been mediocre. Running backs have been fine, but the offensive line has kind of steadily gone downhill. And by the way, the offensive line is a lot better now than it was last year, and holy hell, thank God for that. But then you look at the defensive unit this year, and if UC gets into a situation like they got to on Saturday where they're playing a team that, quite frankly, can't run the ball, and God, if you're Chuck Martin and you're staring into a hurricane, how are you not shitting bricks knowing that you don't run the ball well and you have to have Gus Ragland throw like 40 times a game? Like that would be terrifying. But if UC is going to go against a team like that this year that can't run the ball well and is really reliant on the passing game, that defensive front is going to chew them to pieces.
I would say to even go further with that, if like they're even deficient on one side, even like the passing side, I think like this team could really eat a lot of people up.
Like, oh, yeah.
And we've seen, especially from like kind of the early opponents, like Ohio University struggled. And UConn looks really bad. Like the 5-0 start, like, is like a lot of potential to happen. And then you get to like the, I guess, interesting teams like Tulane and Temple after that. But still, like, you're looking at like a bowl eligibility in the first 6 games compared to what like many people thought they would try slog through. So the defense doesn't just look like good. It's like looks like the best in the conference. Like, the rushing defense is just in the league so far. It's like first by 20 yards. I guess some of it you could blame, like, on Miami being not good. But, they held a team to 50 yards rushing. So, I mean, that's really great.
Yeah, and UCLA's strength this year is going to be that running game. And outside of the touchdown run that they gave up, I mean, they held them to about 2 to 3 yards per carry, which is exactly what you want, not to mention all of the sacks, not to mention the tackles for loss. Like, UC has 5 sacks this year, coming off of a season when they had 12 total. They're on pace for 30 damn sacks this season. That's insane. That is insane. Let's see, the last time they had 30 sacks, the 2014 season. Well, they had 13 sacks in 2015, 19 in 2016, 12 last year. Wow, the Tuberville era really kicked this defense's ass.
It's almost like he didn't know what he was doing with his defensive coaches.
It's almost like he didn't care. Novel concept. Yeah, I'm pretty, I mean, we were kind of talking about this before the, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, on top of the sacks, throw in 2 interceptions. Like,
Oh my God, they pick off passes now? Amazing.
They can get pressure and the secondary makes plays? Like, what is this defense?
Not only that, they almost had a pick 6 on Saturday.
Yeah, it's like, that's the number one story, like, coming out of the first 2 games. Like, the defense, by far. And I think a big part of it is, like, they really bought in, like, this offseason. It's like all the young guys that, like, they brought in and that had to step up on the depth chart that, like, were kind of question marks have turned out to be playing at a really high level to start the season.
Yeah, and, I mean, really, it bodes well for, you know, they're going to lose Broughton at the end of the year, but everybody else around them, like Brian Wright, Jr., the secondary is full of sophomores and juniors. They've got talented redshirt freshmen behind them. It is going to be, I mean, assuming Fickell stays here beyond the standard 3-year mark for a successful coach of this school, they're going to have a good defense for a long time. And pending any major, you know, widespread injuries on that defensive line, they're only going to get better and better and better as the year goes. And we were kind of talking about this in the offseason. When the schedule lines up perfectly to pull off an upset against some of the stronger teams in the conference, like Navy, South Florida and Central Florida, who are in November, right in time for this defensive unit to you know, hit their peak. Broadly speaking, it really could not set up more perfectly for this team going into the rest of the season.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's like it seems like a bit, I guess, premature to say they would be like one of like the favorites in the division. But I think that, unlike last year, they're definitely going to be a tough out in the division. And I think that they have a chance to like shake some things up. Like, obviously going at Central Florida, was going to be a tough game no matter what. But like you said, you get Navy at home, you get Central or South Florida at home. And like the road games, at least after the first couple of weeks, don't look as daunting. Like SMU is 0-2, probably going to be 0-3. Temple is 0-2 and like looks really bad. It's like, I mean, the chance to have a nice record by the time you play Navy is really, really high.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Navy is such a weird outlier right now with having had to play Hawaii and Memphis, like two very pass-happy offenses that really can dictate the pace of play. I'd be curious to see what they do, you know, with their schedule kind of coming a little more down to earth this week against Lehigh and then against SMU in a couple of weeks. I mean, they ended up beating Memphis, but, like, it seems like they struggled to do so. I don't know. I mean, Navy, I feel like the jury's out on them. I'm not sure. I'd like to see how UC does against Temple first, because that's kind of like your preview of the option. I mean, they don't run the same exact system, but it's got similar concepts, more so than any other team on their schedule. So, yeah, if they end up dominating Tulane, I don't know how they can't beat Navy. I mean, to your point, Temple and SMU look awful this year. Awful, awful, awful. Temple has to be the biggest disappointment. But is there any scenario right now where we might not be looking at like an 8-0, 9-0 start, assuming that like something doesn't completely go off the rails here?
I would say like the biggest thing would be like, I guess some of the hot starts coming back down to earth. Or like you start off 3-0 and then like you get caught by like Ohio or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like really, I don't know. It's like hard to not be really excited, especially with how some of these teams have played. Like Ohio just got their doors blown off, didn't they? No, they blew out somebody. But here's the thinking of Temple is like 0-2. Like, that road game, we had as a loss. I think Tulane is interesting, just because they almost beat Wake Forest. But then Wake Forest doesn't look that great.
Yeah, Tulane's always weird, because it's like, from a matchup perspective, if the other side of the ball just isn't prepared to match your zone reads and your pitches and, you know, prepare to counter that, you know, play after play after play. I mean, they can take advantage of that really easily. I mean, that's what Navy's been doing for years. That's why Navy sometimes catches like Notre Dame on the road sometimes or whatever. I don't know. I'm like optimistic about this, because I feel like in recent years, you know, the offense might have been ahead of the defense in some regards, maybe because the defense was just so bad, but the old cliche is, you know, defense never takes the night off. And if they're going to continue to play at this high level, I mean, they're obviously going to beat Alabama A&M this year. Like you said, Ohio doesn't look as good as they used to. UConn is garbage. And, you know, Tulane might trip them up, because they're facing a different type of offense. But, I mean, if they get through that, Temple and SMU don't look good at all. And you're staring at, like, 8 wins potentially going into Navy at home. Who knows?
Yeah, I
don't know. Maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse because it's only been two games, and you know, Miami, it looks really bad, and UCLA, it looks like they're in a complete year zero with Chip Kelly there.
Yeah, it's like almost hard to like try to like hold back the optimism. It's like UCLA does look like a three-win team, and Miami looks like they'll struggle to win six games. But like then on like the other side of the coin, like we haven't seen a UC team play like this well on the road in back-to-back games for like 5 years, and come out 2-0 to start the season. Like they have only won four games the last 2 years, as everybody knows, and it's like a really great start. And with how the league is shaken out, especially the part of the league they play first, like it's really hard not to be very optimistic.
Yeah, I think the only concern we could have going forward is the offense. And I don't know. I'm of the opinion that we haven't been able to see what Denbrock really wants to implement, due in part because the first game was with Desmond Ridder as a freshman quarterback. Now, Fickell went back and said, yeah, the plan was to stick with Hayden Moore for a little bit and then turn it over to Desmond Ridder. That's fine. I mean, you can say whatever you want. That is still Desmond Ridder's first game in the Rose Bowl on the road. And he looked fine. I mean, he's looked really well. He looked really good with his legs. His arm has been okay. And then last week is kind of a throwaway game because you're basically playing in a downpour in 15-mile-an-hour winds. Like, you could see on Twitter. It was funny watching on Twitter, people were saying, like, why do they keep running the ball in the middle? Why can't they just throw downfield? The defense is stacking the box. I'm like, what else are they supposed to do? Like, Desmond Ridder took one deep pass downfield, and it landed about 7 yards short of the receiver because the wind caught it. Like, Denbrock's not dumb. He knows that the name of the game, the objective going into the game is just win the game. Like, who cares how you do it? Open up the offense when you have better weather conditions. Like, we'll see what happens this week against Alabama A&M and then Ohio next Saturday. But if the offense is at worst this bad, which is to say Mike Warren is getting into the end zone two or three times a game, and the running game and offensive line are just pushing the pile forward, and the passing game is average, I mean, they're going to win a lot of games this year with just that, especially with the way the defense is playing. That's all. All the defense needs is an offense that doesn't make a ton of mistakes. And the offense hasn't really done that outside of, well, I mean, with Desmond Ridder at quarterback.
Yeah, and like you can kind of throw out the passing game from the Miami. They only threw the ball 11 times. So, like, that doesn't really count. Like, I thought he looked good enough against UCLA. Like, like you said, the real test is coming this week, where they'll probably open it up more. At least you would hope so. Because, like, the passing game has been, like, the one thing where it's the biggest unknown through two games. So we haven't really seen any of the receivers do much besides, I guess, like, Joseph DeGura is, like, your leading receiver right now. And that probably won't last the entire season.
And the good news is that, like, it looks like, I mean, Jason Jackson, as a true freshman, he's got excellent hands. I mean, you always know what you're going to get out of Khalil Lewis. They're trying to put Michael Warren in as many spots to get the ball in his hands, and that means putting him at wide receiver, go for it. One of my main concerns with the offense is the fact that Michael Warren has 64 damn carries through two games. Like, he's on pace for something like 400 carries this year. Like, as a point of comparison, only the last season in carries was Rashad Penny at San Diego State with 289. Like, around 300 is about what you kind of expect out of an offense. Like, that is nuts that Warren's gonna hit 400. Now, granted, they should hopefully get Dokes back this week or next week. Warren's not going to get all the carries this week. We should probably see more of Charles McClellan and Tavion Thomas. But in that same vein, it is a little concerning that, you know, UC was UCLA only won by 3 touchdowns on Saturday, right? Like, in the vacuum, that doesn't look like a big win. But Miami was doing nothing offensively. Like, they were not threatening the end zone whatsoever. I don't even know if they, what, they crossed the 50, like, 2 or 3 times at best. What's the concern in pulling out Michael Warren for a couple of series, give him a break, let Tavion Thomas and Charles McClellan split, like, 10 to 15 carries, you know, just to give Warren a little bit of a break? Like, that's my concern. I'm hoping that his carries per game declines over the next several weeks. But if it doesn't, I'd be concerned at the end of the season, especially if Doak doesn't come back. Which, I mean, it sounds like he will, but it's just something to kind of keep an eye on.
His carries, it definitely has to come down. It's like you can't run him like a crazy person. Like, why also getting him involved in the passing game? It's like he's got 67 touches already in 2 games. That's got to be like near the top of the nation. And, like, he's performed very well. Like, with 233 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. But, like, yeah, like, long-term, you do worry, especially about running backs, with how kind of, like, disposable, like, they kind of have been just throughout football in general, where, like, some of these guys rush, like, 300 times that season, and, like, their careers are never the same.
It's like, right.
You hope that they start to use him responsibly, and maybe he takes one of those, like, light games where he gets, like, I don't know, like 15 or 20 touches against Alabama A&M. Although, from what we've seen from UC against some of these, I guess, the lesser opponents the last couple of years, that's not necessarily a given.
Yeah, I think we all expect them to beat Alabama A&M on Saturday. I would be concerned if, to your point, you know, they come out lethargic, they kind of chalk up the win on the board before they even see the field. I would think that Fickell has instilled a mentality that every game matters and every snap matters. And I would think he does. And from what we've seen this season, it seems like he's, like, all of that is in place. But I would be concerned, yeah, to your point, if, like, you know, if it's at halftime, it's like 24-14 or, you know, 17-3, like a close score that is, you know, dangerously close. Like, if they're out like 35-3 or 35-7 at halftime, perfect. But yeah, I totally understand that sentiment.
I mean, this is a different team, so hopefully they come out like on fire. Just looking at the Alabama A&M stats, they gave up 164 yards rushing last week, 4.4 yards a carry. So, like, it's going to be a big game for Ritter and Warren, especially Warren. So I think hopefully they can keep it in check and break some big plays in the passing game. Give everybody a little bit of a breather. So that's what these games are for.
Right. I definitely expect – I would expect we see a little more out of the passing game this time. And, you know, who knows if – if the running game is on par to the point where they're reeling off 4, 5, 6 yards to carry per a pop, and Desmond Ritter doesn't have to pass, that's fine. That'd be great. But if they are going to go downfield, I'd like to see them connect on passes. You know, even if it's just like a 20 or 30 yard gain or something like that. Something where we can kind of show that, like, the defense isn't just as one dimensional as they showed the last couple of weeks. And I don't think they are. Like we were talking about, it's a small sample size. Last week it was a throwaway game. Ritter looked pretty solid against UCLA in the passing aspects of the game. I'd just like to see more out of it. You know, I don't have any real concerns long term, but I just want to see more out of the passing game.
Especially since he's, like, so much of an unknown, like, pretty much outside of his running,
right?
Which has been phenomenal. Like, his running ability has been really great.
He's so fast.
The two biggest plays of the season are his runs. Which I saw some stat that UCLA only had 5 rushes of, like, over 20 yards last year, and he's already gotten 2 this season. So, like, that part is really great. But the unknown with his arm, like, if you're looking, like, bigger picture, I guess that would be the only thing you would really, like worry about is like somebody shut down the running game and they had to throw it like 25, 30 times.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I don't know. I'm not sure looking down this schedule. I'm not sure who's going to actually be the ones to shut down the running game. I mean, UCLA had the best talent so far this season on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they were young, but they were talented. Are they going to get the same thing out of Alabama A&M defensively? Nope. Ohio? Meh. UConn? Probably not. Tulane? Maybe. Tulane Temple? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. They're definitely going to lean on the running game this year. I'm just hoping, like, you know, to your point, that they're not going to get completely shut down where they have to pass it a million times. And you'd hope that with how well the defense plays, they don't really need to. But yeah, it's just something to like look out for.
The one other thing with the offense that has really stood out are the red zone opportunities. 7-7 in the red zone. Like, something we really harped on a ton last year was drive stalling out. Like, this year they've cashed in, like, every single time. Like, 6 touchdowns. Like, really great. And
yeah.
They haven't forced the iffy kicky game into really anything. Just 1 field goal the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to that kicking game, it's actually, you say iffy, but it's actually seems like it's been pretty solid. Like, no missed extra points, especially with, like, the wet conditions last week that Cole Smith nailed all 3. I guess we'll just see kind of, like, how the season goes, but, I mean, he looks the parts thus far.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I guess like Andrew Gantz looked the same way as a freshman, and then he got injured, and then it went south really fast. But yeah,
James Smith, he continues to look like an All-American punter, like averaging like nearly 45 yards a punt, like eight of his kicks inside the 20, 350 plus, no touchbacks, and like their punt unit's really good, like top to bottom.
Yeah, the coverage unit's great. Yeah, James Smith is 15th in the country in punting average. He's, it's every kick that he has such a long hang time that, like, the coverage unit gets down there in a hurry. Like, even last week, I mean, you had Khalil Lewis out there as one of the fastest players on the team, you know, covering punts. Even so, I mean, there was so many touchbacks last week. The same thing against UCLA. Yeah, it's one of those situations where you're basically taking the entire punt return unit out of the game just by having James Smith's strong leg. Yeah, it's been really encouraging, and it complements the defense so well, because if you're a head coach in Luke Fickell, you know, you might be on like the 45-50 yard line on a fourth and two or three or maybe 4. You know, you can have that option if you don't feel like running the ball and risking it. Like, assuming the defense has been, you know, keeping you at bay most of the game, just give it to James Smith and pin him down in the 5, and then maybe you get a safety out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's such a big weapon to use, because we've seen from the past, like, going back to, like, the Pat O'Donnell days, like, how much a good punter can really, like, flip things around for you. Like, cause there's a reason, like, those former Bearcat punters are still, like, in the NFL. Like,
right.
Like Huber. Because, like, that's a huge part of the game. Especially, like, when you can, like, lean on your defense to get stops and help get field position back. Like, last year that was such a struggle for this team. They had a lot of hollow yards. And this year, like, their yardage isn't, like, spectacular or anything. But then, like, their scoring offense has been pretty good. At least in terms of opportunities, not like in points per game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And it's, I don't know. It's one of those, it's a strange feeling to have positivity about the program again. Like, God, remember, like, what were we talking like this, like 2 weeks ago before UCLA? We were thinking, oh, God, we're going to get blown out, but hopefully they make it close. You know, maybe they get 6 wins somewhere along the road. And then, you know, we're here 2 weeks later, potentially staring at a bowl game by week 6, and, you know, maybe undefeated heading into November. You never know.
Yeah, and like, but according to like the S&P rankings, like their projected number of wins is risen, like 2.7. So they're projected for 8.8 wins. Just pretty great, and like the biggest mover in the conference. And the fact you just told anybody that, oh, they blow 5-3 in league play, like you would have taken that at the beginning of the season hands down, because that would have meant that they'll probably go 8-4 or 7-5, and I think anybody would take that, even now, them being 2-0. Like if they finished 7-5, that wouldn't be so terrible.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we would take, you know, honestly, 7-5 would be fine with me right now. I mean, I kind of think that's the floor, but yeah, I would be fine with 7-5. I just want them to go to a bowl game. I mean, they probably have the potential to win maybe 8, 9, or 10 when it comes down to it, but yeah, I'd be fine with 7-5.
Yeah, like you said, that seems like the floor, because UConn, SMU, Temple are three of the biggest changes negatively in projected wins. And the great news is you play them three out of 4 weeks. It's like that's a huge opportunity to pick up three more wins. Like, bam, that's 5 wins right there. You just have to win one of your remaining games, which is, like, really doable, especially since one of them is against Alabama A&M.
Yeah, I think one of the only downsides is that I don't know if we've actually learned about Mike Denbrock's and Marcus Freeman's tactics during a game quite yet. I mean, I think they did a nice job against UCLA, but it's only one game. And then Miami, the game plans on both sides were so simple. Like, Denbrock just run the ball and get a few first downs and, you know, get them close to the red zone. Defensively, just stop the run and, you know, get in Gus Ragland's face. I mean, what are they going to do if, like, they face a more talented coaching staff, like, against, you know, South Florida or Central Florida? I mean, unfortunately, we won't really know that until November. They might have a test against Temple. I mean, Temple looks bad, but they at least have a fairly experienced coaching staff. I don't know. I definitely trust them to, like, you know, pragmatically, like, make changes on the fly if they need to. I mean, they've kind of shown that thus far in just over a year in the program. But yeah, well, that's just something to kind of keep an eye on going forward.
And like the one thing that just like radiates through the screen, be it computer or television, it's just like the confidence that they have this season is really like they play. Like, they're the best team on the field, and that's really something we haven't seen, at least for 4 quarters in a while. It's like, they like knew they were going to beat Miami, and, like, they played like it. And the last few years, like, the Miami games were games where, like last year, Miami just gave it away. But there were games where you came out of, like, the Miami game going, like, oh, like, it's not going to, that streak isn't going to last very much longer, because Miami's going to get them one of these days. But, like, the win on Saturday, like, kind of swung it back in the other direction, where it's like, this program looks like it's back on the upswing, and, like, Miami's a team, especially since they don't have to go to Oxford, like, where weird things could possibly happen, where it's like, you should win that game, like, the next few seasons, as long as you have Luke Fickell.
Yeah, you gotta, I mean, I don't know how Chuck Martin survives the offseason. I mean, his program, it seems like they peaked last year. I mean, they haven't looked great in the last couple of weeks. They're relatively close against Marshall in terms of scoring standpoint, but they were on their heels the entire game playing catch up. Then they got Minnesota this week on the road, Bowling Green. Maybe they win 6 games this year, and you know he survives. But if they wind up, you know, firing Chuck Martin, Luke Fickell's here for at least next season, and so next season's another win. Assuming, you know, maybe Luke Fickell leaves, maybe he stays. If he does leave, you know, Miami would still have to hire a solid coach. And as long as Mike Bone doesn't make the Babcock mistake of just going for a name rather than, you know, quality, UC should still have an edge in this series through the end of the series in, what, 2029? Like, I don't know any time in the near future where, unless, like, to your point, there's, like, a wonky game in Oxford, where Miami's going to get another win in this series.
Yeah, it just doesn't look like they're heading the same direction. And
so, Scott, you have any other thoughts on, like, UCLA and Miami, or do you want to look ahead to Alabama A&M and everything the, I'm going to look them up, they are the Bulldogs. Everything the Bulldogs have to offer.
I can't think of anything else. Outside of the fact UCLA looks like they're not going to be very good. And losing Wilton Spate was really bad for them.
Yeah, let's not talk about Wilton Spate, because I don't want to really revisit the bet we made before that game.
That was pretty much it. Yeah, let's move on.
Let's go to the Bulldogs, who are of the FCS variety. They are 1-1 in the season. They have beaten some team called MIL. I'm assuming, Miles. Miles, I assume some Division II school? And then they lost to, well, let's look them up as well, North Alabama. They lost to North Alabama last week, 25-20. This is the first FBS team on their schedule. I think the only one. Yep, looks like it. I don't know anything about them, Scott. Other than what I just read. So, what do you have to say?
Outside of looking up the stats and their loss, they don't really look that great. Seems like they're one of those teams that's going to run the ball a lot, because that's what the smaller schools tend to do. Their passing game hasn't been really great. They're 37-62 through the air with two interceptions. So the potential for a big place from the secondary is definitely there. Well, the 7 yards an attempt by Alabama A&M is kind of interesting. So they're going to try to stretch the field. That's really the only chance they have, is to either try to play keep away or try to play big play against some of these teams.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. I'm just going to go ahead and agree with you there, because I don't really have any other thoughts on them. Like, they're an FCS team playing against a defensive front that has probably some of the best defensive tackles and linebackers in college football right now, and I don't know if they even get to the end zone, like, more than one time. Like, in my opinion, I know we're kind of worried about the fact that this could be a potential, like, letdown game, kind of like Indiana State in Butch Jones' first year, or any FCS opponent during the Tuberville era. But I'm of the mindset that this UC comes into this game, smashes them in the mouth, they win something like 50-3, and they're facing Ohio next week, 3-0.
Last time they played Alabama A&M was with Tuberville, and they won like 52-10. So hopefully we're looking back at that type of performance and not the type of performance that UC's been rolling out against some of these FCS teams the last few years, where it's like, oh, we should start playing now in the fourth quarter. Last year they only beat Austin Peay 26-14.
Yeah, the UT Martin the year before 24-7. If I remember in that one, I think they were tied. Were they tied at halftime?
Yeah, I think they were.
Dear God, the red flags were just all over that regime. They were not tied. They were down 7-6 at halftime to UT Martin, an FCS school. And why the hell was Tuberville not fired from that moment onward? Oh my God. Ugh.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was awful. My thoughts are, I would like them to get up comfortably at halftime, something like, if I don't know, 35-7, something like that. Even if it's like, 24-28-0, 28-3, something where they're showing, like, against last week against Miami, Ohio, the score didn't really show it, but they were dominant in several areas, where it was a comfortable win, even though the numbers didn't really show it on the scoreboard. And then, you see, I want to see what, like, Ben Bryant does. I would assume, I would hate to see Hayden Moore take the ball in the second half when they have an opportunity to get Ben Bryant some reps. Same thing with like Tavion Thomas. I'd like to see what he does. Maybe you see some of the younger receivers. Maybe you put like Alec Pierce out there at receiver. I mean, I know he's been playing special teams up until now. I'd like to see more of Jayshon Jackson. I'd like to see more of the secondary. Maybe you see some Arquan Bush at some point at cornerback. Yeah, I mean, this is really just the opportunity to see what the young guys can do. I mean, they have 4 games to get under their belt and still accept a redshirt this year. I mean, this should be one of those games.
100%. Like, this is the opportunity for the coaching staff to even throw in a lot of young guys early in the game. Give guys different opportunities to play with the different units and see what type of results you get. This is definitely a game where you just want to get like people on film, especially with the new rules where some of these guys who probably won't get a lot of opportunity when the schedule picks back up. So it's time to get them in the game and get them real game opportunities. So hopefully they did put like a couple scoring drives right off the bat and really get things turned up. So I would like to see like Brian get a couple of drives in there.
Yeah, and then kind of like what we were talking about earlier. I mean, it seems like we know what we're going to get out of the defense. I mean, they're going to have a strong defensive front. The secondary is going to feed off of what the defensive front is doing. And so far, the secondary has been excellent. Offensively, we know what we're going to get out of the running game. The rushing offense looks good, or good enough. Let's see what kind of dynamic passing attack that Denbrock actually has. You know, we talked about it. UCLA, where they were fairly limited in the fact that it was Desmond Ridder, a redshirt freshman quarterback's first ever football game. And then, you know, last week they were playing in a monsoon. Let's see what they can do. Let's see if they can stretch to the field. Let's see if they have more dynamic plays in the passing game besides quick outs to like the running back in the flat or a tight end over the middle for 5 yards. Like, let's see if they can actually stretch the field this year. And let's see if the receivers can actually catch the ball. Like, I know I've been a big Hayden Moore detractor over the last couple of years, but he has not gotten any help out of his receiving core. And Jayshon Jackson looks pretty solid so far, but let's see what the rest of them can do.
That's they have to be, like, chopping at the bit to get to get the ball thrown their way. Like, really, like, none of the receivers did anything last week. Khalil Lewis hasn't really, like, produced, like, what he's wanted to this season. Like, it's a big opportunity with a giant talent difference to get some crooked numbers on the board for the receivers. Like, yeah. I'd like to see the first play they just throw deep, just to see what happens.
That's a good idea. Yeah, like, just try something. Like, this is one of the games to experiment, right? Like, last year I can definitely understand. Fickell's coming in. It's game one, and he doesn't really know what his team can do. You know, now he's another year in, and he knows that he's got a defensive front that, you know, yeah, maybe Alabama A&M catches UC off guard and they get an early touchdown or something like that. But he should have enough confidence in that defense to know that if they're going to score a touchdown, that's probably going to be the only touchdown they're going to score. So yeah, try a few things. I think that's a good point. Try a few things. Don't get injured. Come out with a win. Build some more confidence going into Ohio.
Hey, the biggest takeaway being don't get injured.
So yeah.
So even with the running back situation right now, you look at Michael Warren to stay healthy as long as he can, especially when he's playing at such a high level. And, like, you don't want Ridder to get injured either, since apparently, like, he's just a starter now. You never want to lose your starter.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that this is Ridder's team. I fully believe anything Fickell says to the extent of, yeah, we're still trying both of them at quarterback is complete gamesmanship. I mean, everyone and their mother knows that it's Ridder's team. Hayden Moore is a solid practice player and a nice option off the bench if you need to go to him in case of injury. But this is Ridder's team going forward. And yeah, it would be pretty disappointing if he goes down.
Yeah, especially with how like electric he's been in, like the chances he's gotten to shine.
Yeah.
I mean, when's the last time? It had to be since Munchie, where like a UC quarterback had that dimension with his legs, where you could just like, oh, there it goes for 40 yards. Like, there's a game-changing player, like, right there. And I believe he is the first quarterback since Munchie to run for 100 yards. So, good job to Desmond Ridder.
Good job, Desmond Ridder. The ceiling is high. Yeah, any other thoughts on this game? Or should we wrap it up and talk about some conference football?
My only thought is it's weird that they play their first home game this late, since it seems like they've been playing their home games as early as possible. But I guess that's just the way the schedule shakes out some years.
Well, the reason for that is because they changed the Miami-Ohio series, right?
Yeah.
Like, they were supposed to be in Oxford. They were in Oxford last year. They should have been at Nippert this year, and they conceded to Miami to give them Paul Brown Stadium in a, quote, away game, so they could get Nippert next season, right? I think that's how they got drawn up.
Yeah, some semantics like that. But in the game notes, this was UC's first 2-0 start on the road, so it's like the 1800s, like where they started.
I like the road. Is there an asterisk next to that? Everyone keeps calling it a road game. It was so not a road game. There were so many UC fans there. The whole student section was filled.
It says at on the schedule. That makes it a true road game.
it's an official road game. All right. Fine.
Even though it's closer to them than the home team.
Mike Denbrock is just leaning back in his chair, chuckling right now at that whole idea.
let's move on to the big picture of the league. Like, what surprised you, and what's, like, we already talked about who's underwhelmed. So, like, what surprised you about the league so far?
So we're not allowed to talk about the underwhelming part of the league, which is, like, half of it?
Yeah, you can. I just didn't want to harp on Temple too much, because they don't deserve
okay,
it.
Okay, well, all right, we won't talk about Temple. We won't talk about UConn. Well, is UConn, like, quote, a disappointment, or are they meeting expectations?
No, there's still a disappointment. Anytime you give up 800 yards, it's really disappointing.
It's a fair point. And especially when you're facing Rhode Island this week, and who knows if you're going to win that game.
Like, they gave up 500 yards in the first half.
Like, who's the opponent?
Boise State.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, I mean, they've had a horrible schedule. Like, oh God, Central Florida and Boise State to start. But yeah, they have not looked that good. They haven't looked good at all. For me, I'm actually, can we talk East Carolina? Because I don't know if East Carolina is bad or good. Like, they beat North Carolina A&T, or I'm sorry, they lost to North Carolina A&T hilariously in week one. And then they steamrolled UNC 41-19. Like, is that East Carolina actually not being bad? Or is North Carolina just really, 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 really bad? And they're just so bad that they're even worse than ECU? Because they looked really good last week.
I'm leaning towards more is North Carolina's really, really bad. Really, really bad. Although North Carolina A&T has apparently won three games against FBS teams like 3 years in a row. But still, you can't lose to North Carolina A&T at home.
Yeah, they were. The end of the game was actually rather comical. Like, it wasn't the fact that, like, North Carolina A&T was pulling off these wonky plays. Like, they were manhandling East Carolina. Like, defensively, North Carolina A&T was in the backfield, like, every single snap. Like, I can't wait till UC plays them at the end of the season.
Yeah, they'll come and beat a team that has more talent, at least on paper, than North Carolina and just beat them so badly.
Right.
It's like head-scratching. Yeah, we won't really get a clear glimpse of how good or bad they are. Probably bad, because their game against Virginia Tech, it's already been canceled for this week. So is UCF's game against North Carolina, which they could have put up monster numbers against them. Although, were you surprised with how much they seemed to struggle last week, UCF?
Especially Mackenzie Milton. Yeah, I would say so, because I mean, when you have new coaching staffs, you kind of expect them to have a little bit of take a little bit of a step back to just like learn the new system, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Mackenzie Milton looked just so good against UConn on the road. You'd think they would have steamrolled South Carolina State. Maybe it was just a case of just like looking ahead to UNC or something like that. I'm not sure. But yeah, that was pretty disappointing.
The 18 incompletions, 3 picks against 1 touchdown, especially for him with like how efficient he's been throughout his career. That one just kind of stood out a bit.
Right.
Yeah. Right. On the other side, Houston like looks like by far the best team in like the West. Like Arizona is probably bad, but like 45 points in back-to-back weeks, and like De'Aaron King looks really solid too. Seems like they're like back on track.
Yeah, I mean even Houston definitely looks like the class of the West. I don't know if they don't win the West. Memphis is disappointing, just from the fact that. I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit. I mean, they should have beaten Navy. Navy is definitely taking a step back this year. I don't know how Memphis lost last week. They should have won that game. Houston absolutely looks like the class of the West. And I don't know if it is going to be Houston or South Florida or Central Florida coming out of it. Like, gut says Houston, but South Florida also looks pretty good. I mean, they did pretty well against Georgia Tech last week. I mean, it was a back-and-forth game for the most part until, like, the fourth quarter, but South Florida was always in that game, and Georgia Tech isn't that bad this year.
And South Florida does host Central Florida to close the season, although they do go to Houston in the middle of the year. It's like a pretty huge game there.
Yeah.
Navy is interesting because like Hawaii doesn't look terrible. Like you expect Navy to win that game, and then they just get like their doors blown off. But then they upset Memphis at home. It's like maybe it's like a home road thing with Navy. And it makes it even better that they play Cincinnati in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's just tough when you're going into a situation where you have to fly, what is that, like 13 hours from Annapolis to Hawaii? I mean, I'm sure they planned ahead and like went in there a couple of days ahead of time. But yeah, Hawaii looks really good this year. They have almost like that old June Jones, Colt McCoy looking type of like pass happy offense. I still say they should have lost against Memphis. Memphis blew that game more than Navy won it. So I would almost put like Navy kind of in like the disappointing spot because I don't know. Even though going out to Hawaii week one is weird for a program, I mean they didn't look good in that game at all, like at all. Like, Hawaii manhandled them.
Yeah, 59 points, so you can't really get past that first number.
Right.
One team I'm happy UC doesn't play is Tulsa, who almost beat Texas. Like, Tulsa seems like they are bouncing back a little bit from last year.
Yeah. It seems like, I mean, it's early. It seems like in the East, it's two tiers. And, I mean, they're the same as last year, except UC has moved up to the first tier. And then in the West, it's almost like three tiers, sort of. Like, Houston is probably at the top right now. Navy and Memphis and Tulane and Tulsa are kind of in the middle there. And then you have SMU at the bottom. Like, SMU is clearly the basement in that team, in that conference. Or, sorry, in that division.
Yeah, they're kind of lucky they play the same conference with UConn and Temple, like, who are probably the, the only two, like, more underwhelming teams.
Like, right.
That Sonny Dykes hire didn't seem terrible on paper until he coached a bowl game and they lost by, like, 6 million points. Then they get blown out by North Texas, I guess one of their rivals. They're, like, not even really competitive with TCU, like, 42-12. Now they go to Michigan, so they'll lose by 30 points again. Then they host Navy, so, like, there's a great chance they're going to be 0-4 with a lot of, like, 20-point losses. Like, I don't know what Chad Morris did, but it seemed like they ballooned up just for him to, just in time for him to take a good job, and then now they're going to go away again.
I still have faith in Sonny Dykes. Just with his career and what he's done, I still have faith that he'll turn them around. I just think it's a situation that, exactly what you said. They ballooned up just enough for him to take the Arkansas gig, and now they're going through a complete rebuild from ground level.
And, like, they lost, like, all their NFL talent, it seemed.
Yeah. So. Well, good thing they're on UC schedule this year.
And I think we covered everybody in the league. Tulane didn't play anybody interesting this week. So, like, they remain, like, at least one of those games you don't really want to overlook. A game UC is historically lost in their downturn. And East Carolina's, who knows? Temple, like, how are they so bad? That's the main question I want
to know. I refuse to watch Temple football just out of, I don't know, I don't want to, like, you know, gouge my eyes out, you know, for 3 hours. The Nova game is always weird because Villanova always plays in Coast Guard because they're a cross-town rival. Buffalo should be solid this year. I think Ohio was originally picked to win the East. I think Buffalo is going to be up there. I can't remember exactly, but so Buffalo's not bad out of the MAC. But yeah, Temple just looks off this year. Maybe they turn it around, but they just, I don't know. There's something off with them. I mean, not good quarterback play. They haven't gotten into the end zone on the ground really. I mean, it's just a weird off Temple team. So I don't know.
It should be noted, I guess Temple did get off to, like, a weird start last year where they were 2-3, even 3-5 going into the Navy game. Like, and then they ended up rallying and making a bowl game and winning a bowl game. So I guess, like, that possibility is still there, except that their schedule is really tough. They play at Maryland this week.
Yep. Maryland looks legit.
They play host Tulsa, go to Boston College. Go to Navy, Central Florida, and Houston. So yeah, it's looking like their bowl streak comes to an end. And, like, Frank Neutile, like, was like a breath of fresh air in their offense last year, and he's been really underwhelming this year. 4 touchdowns, 4 picks. Completing, like, 50% of his passes.
Yeah, it has not looked good for them. Yeah. Anything else on the leash? Should we just do a quick rundown of the games this week?
Yes, let's do that
real quick.
Let's do that real quick.
Georgia State, Memphis. Who you got?
I think you have to lean Memphis on that one.
It's a soft lean to Memphis. Yeah, I would say soft lean to Memphis. Temple, Maryland.
I'm gonna go with Maryland on that one.
Maryland. Yeah, it's smart. Rhode Island, UConn. Here's a kicker.
I would really like it if Rhode Island beat UConn.
Go for it. Roll the dice.
What about you? Do you think UConn?
I'm picking Rhode Island. I have to. UConn looks awful.
Apparently,
it looks so bad.
That game is a pick right now, but probably because they didn't put it on the real line. Oh, never mind. By the way,
they don't put a line out for FCS FBS games.
Memphis 27-point favorite in their game.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Tulane UAB. Tulane is on the road, and they're favored by 4.
I'd still go with Tulane. I'm kind of interested to see how they are. Like, UAB, like, was like a bowl team last year, I believe. But if, like, the Tulane turnaround is real, like, they should end up pulling that one out. Although I don't know if they'll do it by the spread. I would take the points.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I would definitely take the points. UAB is a little tricky because they're kind of in that sort of we need to rebuild from scratch phase, and they're kind of in that like year one of that. But they lost to Coastal Carolina 47-24 last week. I don't know how Tulane loses these guys. I'm rooting for UAB just as like, you know, a program, like holistically. Like I hope they stay as a program for a long time again. But yeah, I think this week Tulane wins, and yeah, you definitely take the points. SMU Michigan.
But let me think about that one for a minute.
Okay, you take all the time you need. I know it's a toughie. Michigan's only a 36-point favorite.
Yeah, you have to go Michigan there. Poor SMU.
I think Michigan wins, and they win by more than 36. I think they win by, like, 40 or 50.
I think the chance of, like, a 56 to, like, to 10 game is right there. I think it's going to happen.
For sure. South Florida, Illinois.
I think that's kind of an interesting game. It's like a game that, like, hypothetically, South Florida could lose. But it's also a game they should win by double digits kind of easily. So I'll go with them. My double digits.
I 1,000% agree, but I could also see it go either way. Like, you're right. South Florida could win this game, and they should win this game by double digits, and I'm going to pick them to win by double digits. But I would be shocked if they don't, like... I wouldn't be shocked if they fall on their faces and lose like 21-20, like something weird. Like something weird happens in that game, and Lovie Smith's Illini pull up the upset.
I wouldn't either, because it seems like a Charlie Strong team like always runs into some like weird game.
Right. Lehigh Navy.
As much as I want to pick Lehigh, I have to go with Navy.
Navy. Houston, Texas Tech.
That's actually a really interesting game, too. Houston is actually, it started as an underdog, now they're the favorite. So, I think you could ride with Houston. I would go with them pretty confidently. Like, Texas Tech didn't look that great against Ole Miss.
Yeah, Texas Tech is not very good. They lost to a decent Ole Miss team, blew out Lamar in classic Cliff Kingsbury fashion. I think they lose to Houston. Houston's only favored by one. I think they win by like a touchdown. Arkansas State, Tulsa.
I'll go with Tulsa since I just like talked them up. But apparently they're an underdog against Arkansas State.
They are an underdog. What is up with that?
I don't know. That one seems...
I don't know. That's weird.
That one seems all right, like it requires some looking. Arkansas State just lost 57-7 to Alabama. So maybe it's that Bama push.
It was that touchdown they scored, pushed them over the top. Who do you have? Tulsa?
I'll take Tulsa. I'm surprised by that line. Underdog at home. I'll go with Tulsa for sure.
Okay, I'm going to pick Arkansas State just so we don't agree on one of these things. East Carolina, Virginia Tech, both canceled because of the hurricane. UCF, North Carolina, canceled. Cincinnati, Alabama, A&M. Scoring prediction, because this is the team we try to talk about every week, and it's turned into the week.
I'll go 45-13.
I'm going to say, like, what is... touchdowny numbers. 50, is that right? 56? Yeah, 56 to like 10.
Ooh, the big score.
Yeah. And that is it. That's all I got.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week, hopefully. Go Bearcats.
Go Bearcats.